Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. I'm a writer, editor, podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com, host of Josh Nason's Punch Out. Hope you guys are doing great. We are back, continuing our run through the WJAM MMA Show Archives, a program I used to do on ESPN New Hampshire back in 2011, 2012, and my trusted friend, sometimes enemy, just kidding, PJ Hewitt. So we're running through the archives of the show. The show ran for nearly a year before it was unceremoniously canceled, and that's a story we'll get to at a different time. So this edition of the show, which was recorded, this was going into July 4th weekend. This was recorded on June 30th, 2011. So this was a fun edition of the show. We had our biggest guest to date in Carlos Condit. He, the former WEC welterweight champion, and he was obviously making his hay in the UFC. So we chatted about, I think I set a record for the amount of time saying talk about, you know, talk about this, which I hate as an interviewer, as anyone asking any questions, and I hate when I hear other people do it. I'm listening to this. I want to go back in time and punch myself in the face for saying talk about so many times. So enjoy that. You know, take a swig of beer or a drink anytime you hear that, probably about 20 times. So we talked. This is actually a good interview, regardless of my stammering. He was ready to fight Stun Gun Kim, Dong Young Kim, at UFC 132. And so we talked about, you know, his nickname, the WEC days, making that transition. Stun Gun had actually, if you believe this, had talked trash about Carlos Condit, saying he was overrated. So we talked about that a little bit. So it was a good interview, probably about, you know, 12, 13 minutes. And you get to hear some early Carlos Condit before he really got in that upper echelon of the UFC's welterweight division. Also at UFC 132, this was you look back in the show, had some really fun fights. Dominic Cruz was set to defend his bantamweight title for the very first time. Again, this is 6 years ago, so this is pretty crazy stuff. Against a guy you might have heard of, Uriah Faber. That rivalry actually was taking place starting for the first time at UFC 132. So PJ and I talked all about that. This was the first time a bantamweight fight had actually headlined a show. And let's see, the show had actually a lot of changes due to injury. So we ran through that. In the co-main event, Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Leben. A fight I kind of forgot about, but now remembering it, it was amazing. If you guys remember this, and if not, if you have Fight Pass, go watch this fight right now and then come back to this show. This fight was just a lot of fun. Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Leben, co-main event UFC 132. And also, we opined about whether this was going to be the last time Tito Ortiz walked into the octagon, fought. He was taking on Ryan Bader, and my God, what was to come after this this fight against Ryan Bader? It was certainly not Tito Ortiz's last time in the octagon. And so PJ and I went, we kind of go through that. So knowing what is to come, enjoy that. We discussed the UFC and versus card that had just passed by. Nate Marquardt and this whole controversy, if you guys remember, a fighter named Charlie Brenneman. So Nate was pulled from his fight due to, I believe that he had failed a TUE test or something. I just listened to the show. I cannot remember. But anyway, so Dana White was so mad because due to HIPAA laws, I guess we couldn't really figure out fully what the issue, why Marquardt was pulled from the fight. And Dana White fired Marquardt from the UFC, if you guys remember that. So he was pulled from this fight against Rick Story due to some issues with the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. Charlie Brenneman, a local guy who was, I don't even know if he's slated to fight in the show, but he gets this opportunity to take on Rick Story and ends up beating Rick Story in this kind of this unbelievable thing. The Spaniard Charlie Brenneman. So he was, made his UFC debut and defeated Rick Story, who was on this really good run. So this was fun. So we talked all about this weird situation that would happen. And if this happened now, actually, things like this happen now all the time, but this was really unusual at the time. And that Versus show also had, if you're looking for another fight to check out, if you guys haven't seen this, Pat Barry versus Chuck Congo. This was a really fun fight on Versus with a kind of a surprise twist at the end. So if you're looking for two good fights to watch that we talked about on the show, one that we had not seen yet and one that we had, Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Leben and I'm going to say Chuck Berry. Pat Barry versus Chuck Congo was all full of awesomeness as well. And that is it. So we will get to the show. Carlos Condit, some UFC and Versus talk, UFC 132 preview. This was leading into the 4th of July weekend in 2011. Enjoy the WGA MMA show from June 30th, 2011 on JMPO Classic. The 4th of July holiday weekend is here, and the UFC is ready to celebrate with one of the competitors on Saturday's card, Carlos Condit, joining us to talk all about it. Plus, we'll break down all the news regarding Nate Marquardt from last weekend and a ton more. It's Thursday, June 30th, and the WJAM MMA show is live. Hey everyone, Josh Nace alongside PJ Hewitt, here with you for the next hour to talk mixed martial arts and PJ, we got another busy show, so we should just get right to it, huh?
It's always busy, huh?
It's good stuff.
This month has been ridiculously busy with the events every weekend.
Yeah.
And this event, even 4th of July, no different.
Last weekend, there was three events, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We talked about that. Friday, Strikeforce Challengers, Saturday, Bellator, and Sunday, UFC. All newsworthy in their own respects, but we have another big show this Saturday to get to, UFC 132. Carlos Condit joining us in our second segment around 7:25 tonight, so be sure to stay around for that. So let's talk UFC 132, an event that probably due to all the other events going on, again, five out of the last six weekends, it's kind of got overshadowed, but it's got a pretty important main event on top, kind of a rivalry between two guys. You have the bantamweight champion Dominic Cruz defending the title for the first time in the UFC against Uriah Faber, somebody that is very familiar to MMA fans for his stint in the WEC, a really great multi-year run that he had as their champion.
Probably the face of WEC and probably the guy that maybe regular Joe MMA fans or UFC fans,
correct,
they probably know him more than anybody else that came out of the UFC, WEC.
Yeah, he was the featherweight champion, 145-pound champion, and we had a great run, then ran into a buzzsaw named Mike Brown, was able to get a shot at Jose Aldo, and that did not end well. If you love leg kicks and fights, go back and see Aldo versus Faber. Telling about how popular Faber was during that run, WEC had one pay-per-view in its history, and it was headlined by Aldo and Faber. That was the only fight they could really build to. Uriah Faber, one of those guys that he's charismatic. California Kid is his nickname, just exuberance. Any show that they used to do in Sacramento would sell out essentially because
of that. And they did a lot of shows in Sacramento.
Because of that fact, yeah. Absolutely. So we have Dominic Cruz, however. Don't sleep on Dominic Cruz. He is a bantamweight champion for a reason. I believe he's 13-1 going into this fight. And a guy that has, there's a little bit of history between him and Faber. I don't know exactly when it started. It was a few years ago. Basically, Cruz didn't like the fact, he's also a WEC alumni, didn't like the fact that Faber was featured on a poster and I guess was signing autographs over Faber's face. Faber didn't take too kindly to that. It's kind of been a media war of words. Since then, these two guys battle for the 135-pound title this Saturday, and what do you think?
Well, and also Dominic Cruz has one loss, and that one loss came in his WEC debut against Uriah Faber.
Oh, that's right.
So there's just more than just the signing autograph getting mad about that history. Like this is his only blemish on his record is Uriah Faber.
And he gets a chance to avenge it Saturday night. Interesting fight for a lot of reasons. This is the first time that a bantamweight fight, much less a championship fight, bantamweight championship fight, has headlined a UFC pay-per-view. Again, five out of 6 weeks. Pay-per-view buy rate-wise and interest-wise, There's a good buzz among the hardcores and some of the mainstream fans. We'll get to a few of the reasons why in a minute. What's your excitement level for this one?
It's I would say fairly high. I mean, these are guys that not a lot of people know about, at least the mainstream or the like I said, regular Joe MMA fans, UFC fans don't really know. So it'll be good to showcase that. It's a holiday weekend, so I don't know what the buys are going to be. But this obviously was supposed to be originally BJ Penn and John Fitch. Both those guys getting hurt. Those are the original two guys scheduled to fight UFC 132.
Interesting.
Yeah, so both those guys have to withdraw due to injury. There's a couple other schedule changes also on this card from the original lineup, which they had pegged. Evan Dunham was supposed to take on George Soteropoulos. He's out. Soteropoulos now takes on Rafael Dos Anjos in one of the undercards. Jason Mayhem Miller, supposed to be making his UFC debut on this card against Aaron Simpson. He had to back out because he's been pegged as one of the coaches for the next Ultimate Fighter. Mm-hmm. Cub Swanson is supposed to face Eric Koch. He had to back out with an injury. Koch has now been moved to UFC Fight Night 25. He will take on Jonathan Brookings, who, of course, won the Ultimate Fighter two seasons ago.
So let's take a look at what we do have. Pretty good card overall. Co-main event spot, Wanderlei Silva. He's still alive, folks. Has not fought in a long time, taking on Chris Lieben. Lieben had a great run at middleweight. He basically fought twice in essentially 2 weeks' time, won both fights, ran to the All-American for Jack Swagger fans, Brian Stann. And Stann took care of Lieben pretty quickly. Interesting fight. Wanderlei, again, if you want to look up when the last time Wanderlei fought was, but I believe it was
2010. It was early on in the year, I believe. I'll bring
was that
up
against
right
Rich
now.
Franklin?
No, actually, he won his last fight against Michael Bisping.
Oh, that's right.
And that was back at UFC 110 on February 21st of 2010. It was Rich Franklin before that. But that was a June of 2009. So he's been spreading out these last few fights that he's had.
He's been recovering from a lot of injuries. He did have some plastic surgery on his face, I believe. So he looks a little bit different than before, which caused some people to laugh in the in the biz. But yeah, Silva overall, he's a guy that his heyday was during the Pride era. If you're not familiar with Pride, DVR, the Best of Pride series, it runs on Spike occasionally. Awesome, just brutal fights. If you think that MMA is tough these days, throw in head stomps, soccer kicks to the face, and just an overall level of just aggression that was unbelievable. But Wanderlei Silva back in those days was incredible. Again, he's been fighting at 185 pretty much for the past few fights. That Franklin fight was a catchweight, I believe. He's on the closer to the end of his career than he is at the beginning, obviously, but still some power. Chris Lieben is someone that, again, he made that little kind of mini run, started kind of making himself a name, and now he finds himself in a co-main event spot against a guy that is viewed by many as a legend in the sport, in Wanderlei Silva.
Yeah, and Silva, you think, you know, he's had some trouble in his past few fights here. We mentioned, you know, he lost. Yes, I had it brought up, and I got to bring it back up again. Yeah, he lost to Rich Franklin before that, lost to Quentin Jackson, had a big knockout of the night, and it was the MMA Awards knockout of the year against Keith Jardine. But before that, had lost three fights in a row dating back to his last two fights in Pride. And then his UFC, it wasn't his debut, but it was the first time he had fought in UFC in a few years against Chuck Liddell. So he's only got one, you know, two wins in his last seven fights right now. And he's an older guy, and you kind of see him maybe on the way out right now. And Lieben's a guy who has had a little bit of a setback, but like you said, making that run, but a win over Wanderlei Silva looked good on his resume.
Yeah, I like Lieben a lot. And it was tough to see him go against Stann because I like Stann a lot. And originally they were talking about Stann versus Wanderlei Silva in this spot instead. However, Wanderlei very wisely said that he didn't really want to fight an American hero and get booed. So he decided to take the other route, which that's interesting enough. So we'll see what
happens. He's a really nice guy from all accounts, is Wanderlei Silva. Everybody loves him.
He is. I remember when I saw him at the UFC Fan Expo in Boston. There was just a huge line to get his autograph. And yeah, smiling, just very gracious. And this should be good. Should get a good pop on Saturday night. The co-made event, you could say, the third fight from the top, we could be saying goodbye, PJ. Saying goodbye to someone that I played in a video game multiple times, UFC Unleashed 2, I think was the name of the game. A man that he elicits one of two reactions, love or hate, from MMA fans. We're talking about the one and only Tito Ortiz. Tito Ortiz returned to the octagon for what could be this last tilt, and a lot of people, it feels the media this week, feels it's a lot like a death march for him, unfortunately. I mean, it's this impending sense of doom that this is going to be the last time we see Tito Ortiz. By the way, he's fighting Ryan Bader this Saturday night.
Yeah, and I think when we first heard that this fight was going to happen, both you and I were watching a fight together, I believe, and we both looked at each other and like, Ortiz has no shot against Ryan Bader. Ryan Bader just has been a fantastic fighter in the UFC, and he is coming off a loss to John Jones, but you know, John Jones is champion right now, and we all know how quickly he rose to the level he rose
to. No shame in losing that dude.
Nope, and that's Bader's only loss. You know, has wins over Keith Jardine and Antonio Rogério Nogueira in his last two fights. So, yeah, I think this fight ends sooner rather than later, and I think Tito Ortiz, this is his swan song in the UFC.
And let's kind of just really quick just kind of go over Ortiz's career. I mean, he started way back in 1997. This is, again, the kind of the dark era. Competed for years and years and dominated that 205-pound division. Light heavyweight championship. He's one of the guys that, love him or hate him, his name is synonymous with the UFC, and we were on New Hampshire Game Night right before this, little crossover segment, and Tito Ortiz was immediately a name that the guys knew. They weren't MMA fans, but they knew that name. Ortiz, Liddell, and Couture seem to be the three guys that everyone knows from that era. So again, he defended that championship, fought the guys. You know, Ken Shamrock, his battles with him were somewhat legendary. Obviously, another guy well known from that era.
Yeah, beat him three times.
Beat him three, yeah. And then so his just kind of looking over the past few years, he had left the UFC, kind of a dispute with Dana White. He had back surgery, ended up coming back. They tended to patch things up. The past few years had not been kind to Tito. He battled Chuck Liddell for the second time back in December 2006. That was a mega event. That was UFC 66. If that gives you any perspective, this is UFC 132 that we have coming up Saturday, just how many events there have been since then. So he fought Chuck Liddell, lost in the third round via TKO, did a draw with Rashad Evans about 7 months later, then fought Lyoto Machida, lost a unanimous decision, lost a split decision to Forrest Griffin, and then lost a unanimous decision to Matt Hamill. So he's been fighting pretty sparsely. He fought once in 2010, once in 2009. His best days are behind him, and he has to win. Because, again, his last win came in October 2006. The Red Sox had won one World Series. There's no sell. You know what I mean? It gives you some perspective how long ago that was. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, and that last win came against Ken Shamrock, so you know how long ago that was. And, you know, but you look at the list of guys that he's fought. You know, Forrest Griffin, Vitor Belfort, Patrick Cote, just going down the line kind of in chronological order here. Wanderlei Silva, Frank Shamrock, Guy Metzger way back in some of his...
Guy Metzger.
In some of those early fights, yeah, has a loss and win over Guy Metzger.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, and made his debut at UFC 13 back in 1997, did Tito Ortiz.
And because of the whole Jenna Jameson stuff, and because of all the Twitter stuff, and because he's Tito Ortiz, people just... He was a personality, but I tell you what, he made millions and millions of dollars off that personality. Well known. I guarantee if any mainstream fan, if you said Tito Ortiz, mainstream sports fan, they would at least know the name and they'd be familiar with it and so on and so forth. So that should be an interesting fight. Again, Ryan Bader, we talked about a little bit, but the favorite is Bader. But who, you know, Tito Ortiz, you never know, but I think we kind of know what's going to happen in this case. Carlos Condit versus Dong-Young Kim. We'll talk about that next segment with Carlos Condit. He's going to join us live on the WGAM MMA show. Round out the main card. Interesting fight at lightweight. Dennis Seaver versus Matt Wyman. Matt Wyman finding himself in the pay-per-view card, pay-per-view opener, which is surprising to me. But Dennis Seaver, a tough German fighter. Just that's the best way to describe it. He's just a beast.
Yeah, he has one loss in the past about 3.5 years, and that loss was to Ross Pearson at, I believe, it was Fight of the Night, and I believe you were at that event in Charlotte?
April, yeah, that was a great fight.
Yep, he's got on a 3-win fight streak right now versus, beat Spencer Fisher, Andre Winner, I guess a little irony there, and George Sotiropoulos is also on the card. Matt Wyman also on a 3-fight win streak. His last 3 fights: Shane Nelson, Mac Danzig, and Cole Miller.
Yeah, and that Cole Miller fight actually, how did that end?
That Cole Miller fight was a unanimous decision. That was back in January of this year.
I remember that.
At UFC Fight for the Troops 2.
If I remember right, Matt Wyman is a tough alumni somewhere in the middle seasons. I am completely blanking on when. Anyway, so
Matt, you was a tough five.
Tough five. So yep. He's been around for a while. Guy's kind of hung around, a little career resurgence here. Seaver is spinning back fists, spinning back kicks.
And you're guaranteed at least one spinning back kick.
Actually, you're guaranteed like 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And you just never know when they're going to come. But he's an interesting dude. He's won 3 in a row. Again, he beat Sotiropoulos. So that was essentially, they were saying if Sotiropoulos had won that fight, he was going to be next in line for a shot at the lightweight championship. So Seaver wins this. He has now put himself still in that upper echelon conversation. So definitely a guy to watch. And for someone that if you've not seen him fight, check him out for sure. Rounding out the card real quickly, the spike card, Melvin Gillard versus Shane Roller. Should be a great fight. The aforementioned George Sotiropoulos looking back to getting back on the winning track against Rafael Dos Anjos. And then on Facebook, 4 very interesting fights. Brian Bowles, a former, we're talking about bantamweight champions, former WC bantamweight champion Brian Bowles is going to take on Takai Mizuzaki. That should be great. Brad Tavares versus Aaron Simpson. Anthony, I always cannot pronounce his name. Nakhchiwani.
Sounds good. Sounds right.
Versus Andre Winner and Jeff Holland versus Donnie Walker. Should be a really fun card, especially that Gilard versus Shane Roller fight, and see what George Sotiropoulos does in his comeback. So all kinds of good stuff. Well, let's take our first break of the night. We're going to break here for a few minutes. Coming up next, UFC welterweight, UFC 132 competitor, the natural born killer, Carlos Condit, joins us after the break. This is the MMA Show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio, WGAM, The Game. We are back, WGAM MMA Show, Thursday night, talking about UFC 132. And joining us live from Las Vegas, Nevada, is a man that will be competing on the main card at UFC 132 this Saturday night against Dong Young Kim, former WEC welterweight champion and the natural born killer, Carlos Condit. Carlos, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, man. Just getting ready for Saturday.
As are we. I love that nickname, natural born killer. Tell me what the origin is of that.
Actually, you know, I thought it up myself. You know, I know it's horrible to give yourself a nickname, but you know, when I was first starting out fighting, I didn't have one, and I looked like a clean cut little college kid. So I wanted to intimidate folks.
That's a great intimidating nickname. I love it, and you can tell, you know, once you kind of get in the cage, and I've heard this before that people are nice guys outside of, but once you get in it and they announce that name, that you kind of take over. And I definitely see that in your face every time your name's announced.
Yeah, you know, I like to bring intensity in my fights, and I like to flip the switch in the locker room.
Well, let's start with this Saturday night. You're going in against a guy, Dong Young Kim. The guy's won 3 in a row. You've also won 3 in a row, and kind of tell me what's going to happen on Saturday.
You know, Dong Young Kim's a very tough opponent. It's a tough matchup for me. He's got great wrestling, great top control. You know, I think that I have the skill set to be able to deal with it.
So originally you were going to fight Chris Lytle, but you had a knee injury. So was it difficult to kind of turn that fight or not be able to have that fight and be able to change opponents? Was that difficult for you at all?
Yeah, man, I was really disappointed. You know, my training camp had been going really well in preparation for the Lytle fight. And, you know, just, you know, one of those things, man, I twisted my knee up pretty good. And I had to back out of the fight. You know, I stayed in shape, and you know, I actually made some improvements in some different parts of my game. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'm back ready to get my momentum going again.
So Dong Young Kim, he's someone that is undefeated going into this fight, and mainly he's won by decision. And, you know, you finished your last two guys in a row. The last one, Dan Hardy, was one of the more spectacular knockouts I've seen in a long time. Do you feel that both of you bring different styles to this fight?
Yeah, you know, like you said, primarily he's had decision wins, you know, somewhat lackluster fights, somewhat boring, you know, with his just top control style. And yeah, I like to get in there and mix it up and, you know, take risks and you know, look for the finish. So yeah, I think we have different approaches in the cage.
Now, Carlos, you're 27 years old, but you've been fighting in MMA since 2002. What got you into the sport? What drove you to become a fighter and want to do this?
Well, when I started watching UFC back in like 93 when it first came out, and you know, at the time I was into martial arts. I was into Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and Ninja Turtles and stuff like that. And so, you know, that was right up my alley as a young rambunctious kid. And when I was about 15, I actually just looked in the phone book to maybe find a school, and I was lucky enough to be in Albuquerque where Greg Jackson was teaching, and you know, the rest is history.
So you talk about training with Greg Jackson. His really regarded as one of the best trainers in the sport, if not the best. Takes a real mental aspect to the game, and some that's a little bit different than other trainers. Talk about that experience of working with him and what you think is different, makes him different as opposed to other trainers.
Well, first of all, Greg has been doing mixed martial arts since, you know, since before most people even knew what the UFC was. They were basically developing their system. There was police officers and guys who were working security at nightclubs and actually, putting this stuff to the test in the real world and, using what worked and getting rid of what didn't. And then besides his experience, just his approach, like you said, he's a master tactician and, really approaches the sport in a pretty unique way.
Now, we mentioned your win over Dan Hardy your last time out. Before that, you had wins over Rory McDonald and Jake Ellenberger. What have you learned over those last three fights, you think, that you can take into this fight with Dong Young Kim? What do you think you learned over those three fights that will help you the most?
I think that I need to push the pace in this fight. The Rory McDonald fight showed that, you know, I get stronger as the fight goes on. Kim in some of his previous fights has faded, in the later rounds. So that's where I feel like I can really, flip the script on him. But I plan on coming out strong and finishing strong. The fight against Dan Hardy, I was ready to go. I was firing on all cylinders in the first round and was able to get out of there with a knockout in the first.
Talking with Carlos Condit, he fights this Saturday night, UFC 132. Talk about your early part of the career. You were the final WBC 170-pound champion. You came to the UFC and you fought Martin Kamen out and lost a decision. Did you see that jump or that change? Was their level competition a lot different than you initially thought it would be?
You know what, man? The competition wasn't that much different. Around the time that I went from WEC to UFC, I was also changing camps. I'd been at a camp in Albuquerque for my entire career, and got burnt out there and went to Arizona Combat. So that was a bigger transition for me than going from one organization to the other.
Talk about the change in camps and how difficult it is for a fighter. Because I think that a lot of mainstream fans may not understand how different that is to go from a team that you've come with and rolled with and fought with for years and years and years, and then to be able to change that, the difficulties in making that decision and what you looked for in a new camp.
Different trainers have completely different approaches, and if you're used to one approach, you're used to one style, and you go to a different camp, and especially if they try to change it up and make you fight the way that they want you to fight, it can be difficult.
Wondering, leading up to this fight, especially in the past few days, Nona, do you pay any attention to any of the media, any of the trash talk that's been going on from Kim's camp?
I guess he said I'm underrated, but, that's about it. I don't know. Is he out there talking trash?
Well, no, I think probably that was the one interview with Ariel Helwani heard today. He said you're overrated, hasn't fought guys like him before. Not tough guys like GSP that can take you to the ground and that are strong on the ground, basically kind of like calling out the people you fought and beat as not up to his level.
Well, talk doesn't mean much when the cage door closes, and we're going to find out Saturday night.
So if you win the fight Saturday night, do you feel you should be next in line for the UFC welterweight title?
I feel like if I have a dominant performance, I plan on finishing Kim. If things go according to plan, I think that a good argument could be made for me to get that title shot.
So, having asked that, any picks for GSP and Diaz?
Diaz might give him some problems, His incredible wrestling and athleticism will definitely win him the fight.
So before we let you go, Carlos, a chance to plug any social media sponsors, anything like that?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter. It's at Carlos Condit. And, you know, I do my best to interact with fans. You know, so if you give me a Twitter, and I'll definitely get back to you. Also, I got a brand new walkout tee from Head Rush Brand coming out for UFC 132. Should be on sale now on their website. About it.
So, what's your walkout music going to be?
It's going to be a surprise, man.
A surprise. I like that. And I've always wanted to ask, how does one go about picking out walkout music? Some people I know stick with the same music their whole career, but interesting, what your thought process is going into this one?
For the most part, I just like to come out to something that inspires me, something that fires me up. And, in the past, that's been Rage Against the Machine, which is, a band that I like quite a bit. I'm going to switch it up on this one, but I'm going to keep it under wraps till fight night.
Well, if fight enough wasn't a reason, I think that's enough reason to get the event. Coming up this Saturday, UFC 132, the man we're talking to will take on Dong Young Kim. Carlos Condit, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck Saturday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Great interview, Carlos Condit. Guy, 170 pounds. That is, he's right. He's right in line to be next. We talk about 170 a lot of names, but they're all at the same level. And I think with a win over an undefeated guy, I think he puts himself right in the conversation for being next in line for GSP or Nick Diaz.
Yeah, and Kim has already called out and said that he thinks that he deserves to take on GSP if he wins the fight. So it'll be very interesting to see. You know, that it should be a very interesting fight. He did call Kim's style a little bit boring. Mm-hmm. I like that. So we'll see. We'll see if he. And he said he was going to push the pace and try to and I see if that works to his advantage.
Yeah, it was looking over kind of you look at trends and things like that. And Condit was a guy that had gone some decisions before, but again, the last two fights, especially the Dan Hardy win, it was almost like I think it's the end of Rocky III. When they go, ding, ding, and he and Apollo Creed.
They both throw the punch at the same time.
That's exactly what happened that fight with Dan Hardy. Condit hit, and then Hardy dropped. He was out like a light. And it was one of those fights that you saw it and you were like, wow, that kind of came quick. It was almost shocking. It was in England. So Condit he's a guy, he came from WEC, was killing guys in WEC. Came over, kind of struggled in the Campman fighter. It was really actually a closer fight that I'm giving it credit for. But he's turned the corner. This might be a big run for him.
Yeah, when he won the WEC welterweight title, it was vacant. He beat John Alessio to win that and defended it three times. And like you said, was the last WEC welterweight before he made the jump to UFC. Lost to Martin Campman, but has won his last three. So I think, are we making our picks now? Are we going to hold off?
Yeah,
on that?
You know, we have a few minutes before the break, and I listened to the show from last week. We're supposed to do picks. We said we're going to do it in the final break. We never made any picks. So we got a few minutes before the break. So let's go over the picks. I'm going to ask you, we'll start with the main card first. So Dennis right. Seaver versus Matt Wyman. Who do you pick?
I really like Dennis Seaver a lot, and I think he's a very exciting fighter to watch, very strong, he's very compact. You look at him, he's not very tall, and everything seems to be just perfect for him, like size-wise. So I like Dennis Seaver in that fight.
I will also pick Dennis Seaver for that. I say he's going to win by unanimous decision. He's going to pound it out over three rounds because Matt Wyman's pretty tough. Carlos Condit versus Dong Young Kim?
Is being, I guess, I don't know if you call it homerish by picking the guys that are always coming on our show, but I tend to do that. I think Carlos Condit gets this fight, even though, Kim is an extremely talented fighter.
You know, you can pick against him. He's not going to come here from Vegas and kill you.
It's true, but
even though his nickname is the natural born killer.
I think I've only missed one or two. I think I'd have to go back, but out of guys that have been on our show that I've picked, I think it's Rick Story might have been the only one, but then again, that kind of got thrown off a little bit because he wasn't supposed to fight who he fought last week. So.
Correct. So Carlos Condit, I will pick Condit as well. I'm going to pick a second round TKO for this, and based on what he's done the past two fights, I think he's surging at the right time, and I think he definitely can make a case for being next in line for a title shot. If you're joining us late, you missed us talking about Tito Ortiz and Ryan Bader. I think you kind of know what our thoughts are on this. I think Bader is going to win. I think it's going to be a decision. I'm going to give Ortiz credit enough for that. And this is going to be goodbye to a legend.
I think it's going to be goodbye to a legend. I take Bader, but I don't think Ortiz makes the fight. Doesn't make the end of the fight. Well, he might. He might be there physically, but if you looked at his last couple fights, he hasn't looked good, even the ones that have gone to decision. So I think Bader wins handily, and I think he gets a knockout.
Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Lieben.
Silva's a guy I think is on the way out, and he's been a fantastic fighter, but like you said earlier on, his heyday was behind him. His heyday was really in Pride. You know, came to the UFC, hasn't been fantastic, at least, you know, record-wise hasn't been fantastic. And I think Lieben rebounds from his loss last time out, so I pick Chris Lieben.
I'd say that he still get the magic one more time. Wanderlei Silva versus first-round knockout, even though I love me some Lieben.
Lieben is not going to get knocked out in the first round.
Wanderlei Silva, first-round knockout. And in the main event, bantamweight championship of the world, PJ, the champion Dominic Cruz versus the young challenger Uriah Faber. What say you?
Say me Uriah Faber, but I would not be surprised if Cruz won this fight. I'm just going with Uriah Faber. I think he wins a split decision.
A split decision.
Wow. I think it's going to be very, very close. I think Uriah Faber's going to. He didn't perform bad his last time out, but you know, you could still see there was a little bit of room for improvement there. And Dominic, he's going to need it if he wants to take Dominic Cruz a distance, because he's very, very good. But I think he gets his second win against Dominic Cruz and gives Cruz his second loss.
I will pick unanimous decision Dominic Cruz. I think he's too quick. I think his striking is too crisp, and he is going to dance around, strike enough, and put on a dominant performance five rounds.
Would not be surprised if that happens.
Final break. Coming up, we're going to talk about UFC on Versus 4 and try to make some sort of sense of Nate Marquardt's situation. A lot of testosterone talk ahead. This is the MMA Show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio. WGAM, The Game.
WGAM, The Game.
WGAM, MMA Show, final segment. If you just were listening live, you heard a pretty entertaining promo about Charlie Sheen taking steroids during the filming of Major League and drugs and sports.
What a segue into what we were just going to start talking about.
Yeah. Before we get to that, though, PJ, tell people where they can find us on the various interwebs.
You can go to WGAMradio.com, look under shows, go to the WGAM MMA show. We podcast everything there, so if you missed a couple shows, and again, like you say, shame on you. But you can listen to all of our shows there. Also, there are links to our Twitter at WGAM_MMA. And of course, the blog, WGAM MMA blogspot.com.
Listen to the guests that we've talked to since we've launched here back in mid-May. Bjorn Rebney, John Howard, Noah Wiseman, Kenny Florian, Chuck O'Neill, Rick Story, Phil Davis, and Rick Hahn. We are building a resume.
Like it.
I like it. Final segment, like I said, shame on you if you've missed it.
A guy who's going to need to get his resume in order.
Yes. Oh, me?
No, not you.
Oh, boy.
To the guy we're talking about next.
I thought it was going to be a big announcement here. So first segment, we previewed UFC 132. Just talked to Carlos Condit, who competes at UFC 132, and that was a fun interview, so check that out. So we'll talk about last Sunday's event, UFC on Versus 4. We'll recap that. But let's start out with Nate Marquardt, who was supposed to main event, if you listen to our show, cliffhanger. He was supposed to main event this event against Rick Story, former guest of the show. And news broke late in the week, and it was around, actually it was Saturday.
Saturday afternoon,
that Nate Marquardt.
Because they told the public at the weigh-ins, Joe Rogan announced it at the weigh-ins.
Yes, that Nate Marquardt was not going to compete in the main event. And there's a big question of why not? You know, he wasn't medically cleared to fight. And it wasn't just medically clear like an injury, like most people assume right off. It was because the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission wasn't going to let him fight because he had not taken care of an issue that he was supposed to in order for him to get licensed. So everyone's kind of asking questions and wondering, well, what's going on? Because of HIPAA laws, which legislate, people don't really think of HIPAA in sports, but basically the State Athletic Commission said we can't reveal because we have very strict HIPAA laws in the state of Pennsylvania. So Dana White was not happy with this, and he had just found out on Thursday that there might be an issue with Marquardt getting licensed. Apparently, this issue had been going back 6 weeks just with the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. We'll get into that in a second. So they wouldn't license him, and so the UFC said, okay, we have to pull him out of this fight. And Charlie Brenneman a fighter who was supposed to fight on the show against a guy named TJ Grant, who had to pull out because of injury, a local guy in Brenneman, got his shot against Rick Story in the co-main event, ended up winning by unanimous decision. It was a kind of a fun thing because he was, again, a hometown guy. He had brought, I think he said 200 or 300 people there, had bought tickets to watch him fight, and took advantage of the situation. Kind of a boring fight at times, to be completely honest, but he took advantage of it and won. So the question then was, okay, you know, what happened to Nate Marquardt? Is there an issue going on? A lot of people assume steroids. So what happens is Dana White fires Nate Marquardt. He finds out on Twitter. He found it from his agent, who found out via Twitter.
Yeah, and posted a video on Twitter that he had been cut.
Right.
And he was never going to. We actually got a clip of Dana White here talking about the decision that went into cutting Nate Marquardt.
The thing that's going on with Nate Marquardt, Pennsylvania laws are unfortunate that the commission can't come out and announce medical records or medical situations with fighters. But I think it's pretty clear to the fans and everybody else that I'm pretty disgusted with Nate Marquardt. He's been cut from the UFC. He won't fight in the UFC ever again. Bottom line is, what Nate Marquardt did is bad enough to be cut from the UFC.
So what did he do? So what he did is he was getting treated for low testosterone levels. And this is something that apparently goes back months and months and months, because now there's a story with New Jersey and him getting licensed there. He got licensed for a fight against Dan Miller, which he won. But then now there's people asking, what were his levels there? And there's this whole story you can look up. There are so many details to this story. It's insane. So Marquardt got the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission said that because of his testosterone levels, which they had been aware of and working with him on to figure out levels and all this stuff, because he'd been getting essentially hormone replacement therapy to assist with this, there was his levels were too high. So with all of this, again, it's such a mess right now. So Marquardt got cut. He did a full interview. I'd suggest you check at MMAfighting.com. He did the interview Tuesday with Ariel Helwani, an hour long. Really tells you a lot of his side of the story. He answered all the questions, and you can decide for yourself from there. Really what this comes down to is a question of, again, hormone therapy in sports. It comes down to whether you agree with replacing testosterone or boosting testosterone levels. And it also comes down to this. Nate Marquardt got cut that day, that night. Chael Sonnen, who got busted for hormone therapy and this whole dragged out affair, still has his job. Kind of almost feels like a double standard.
A little bit. And the question was raised to Dana White about, well, you've kind of had some troubles maybe with Nate Marquardt in the past, you know, did cutting him right away have anything to do with that? Dana White actually spoke about that too.
If you really look at how I've treated people and treated fighters over the last 10 years, I give a lot of guys chances, and I know that everybody makes mistakes, and Nate Marquardt has been one of those guys. So for me to come out and say he's not going to fight in the UFC anymore, it's got to be pretty serious. It's not because, Nate and I had some problems or, you know. Otherwise, if that was the way I felt about Nate Marquardt, would he be headlining a show on Versus? Would he be in the position that he's in the welterweight or middleweight division? No. I've had a good working relationship with Nate Marquardt.
So we'll see what happens now. Apparently he's pretty close to being licensed again by Pennsylvania, which means he can get licensed by other states.
Yeah, his levels went down, I believe, 72 hours afterwards, and they cleared that. So all it was is just a reapplication process, pretty much just to be allowed to fight in Pennsylvania again.
But he is now a free agent, and this situation will be talked about a lot. Again, do some research. Just search for Nate Marquardt online. Start with the interview from MMA Fighting and sift through, what is it? My head hurts by talking about all this.
Is now Bellator the destination for Nate Marquardt?
That's a good question, because immediately I thought of that. Because again, there's not a lot of places these guys to fight anymore. Strikeforce is owned by Zuffa, so that's not an option. And the question is, there's a lot of fighters that don't agree that Marquardt should be taking what he was taking. Does Bellator bringing him in, does that association hurt or help? And that's something that, you know, obviously Bjorn Rebney have to evaluate. Obviously a big name guy in that organization. And the 170-pound champion Ben Askren had some choice comments on Tuesday for Nate Marquardt and essentially said, come here and I'll beat you up. So he wants to fight him, which that'd be a really fun fight at 170 pounds. Does Bellator want to do that? You know, it's one of those things where if he's cleared to fight and he's out there and he's got a resume like he does, why wouldn't you bring him in?
I think you'd have to. He'd be the biggest name in Bellator, maybe besides
Eddie Alvarez.
Besides Eddie Alvarez.
But because of all the press coming off this, you know, is there any such thing as, there's no such thing as bad ink. You know what I mean?
Right.
An organization at Bellator that needs some, you know, did okay in the rings of the summer series this past week, but, you know, they're looking for anything that they can get.
Yeah, so I think what maybe helps Nate Marquardt a little bit is this. It happened before the fight happened. Mm-hmm. So he didn't get a knockout win or a good win, and then this all comes out. You know, he wasn't allowed to fight. So if he comes back in and his testosterone levels are where they should be, you know, Bellator signs him, he goes out, I think it's good for them.
Yeah.
It's a draw, and it'll bring people in, you know, for their events on MTV too.
What this has done too is kind of raise awareness of drugs in sports, any type of assistance in sports with MMA. And again, we'd be naive to think that every single guy in the sport is clean. Obviously they do testing before competitions, but not in off times. And this is now some talk that Nevada is going to start testing in off times to help combat this. What's the right answer? It's someone we'll be continuing to talk about for years and years and years. But obviously do the research on Nate Marquardt. It's pretty interesting stuff.
But I think this sends a message to anybody else in the companies, Strikeforce or UFC, from Dana White and Zuffa, that this sort of thing's not going to be tolerated, especially now that it's happened twice in the past couple of years with Chael Sonnen and Nate Marquardt.
And we say this type of thing. It's really and disclosure and all this. It's
and
just,
also things,
it's
too, about guys with passing or not – passing urine tests, you know, because it's not consistent with human urine. Who was it?
Thiago Silva.
I wanted to say Thiago Alves, and yeah. I knew that wasn't right.
And he's out for a year, and he didn't get cut.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff. Got about a minute or so left, a couple minutes left. Real quick, the knockout heard around the world.
Czech Congo, Pat Barry.
Wow. If you haven't seen this fight, go see it. Incredible. Pat Barry just coming out slugging. Czech Congo is all over the place, rubber legs. And then all of a
sudden, gets knocked down twice. Josh Rosenthal, the referee, they look similar. had his hands on both fighters like he was getting ready to stop the fight, but Congo, I guess, did enough to show that he wasn't completely knocked out, so he backed off. Congo stood up and then knocked out Barry.
It was incredible. It was one of those things where I get texts from you and some other people like, holy bleep, you know what I mean? It was incredible. So go see that.
Holy bleep!
Yes.
Not that? Yeah. Thanks, Bob Ryan.
Last week's guest, John Howard, not successful, losing a pretty bland decision to Matt Brown, probably going to get cut. And Matt Mitrione, one of my favorites, being Christian Moorcraft by KO in the second round.
He just won't lose.
He will not.
He won't lose.
No, he won't. And that's a good thing, too. Lots of other good fights in that that card as well. Didn't make air.
Quick side note, boxing. Kimbo Slice makes his boxing debut coming up soon.
Awesome.
I don't have the date in front of me.
No.
I'm not going to watch it. But
another big boxing day. Actually, this weekend, David Haye and Vladimir Klitschko should be great. Big show, again, UFC 132 coming up this Saturday. We talked to Carlos Condit, so thank him. And thank all you guys for listening. And spread the word about the show, WGAMradio.com. Search for the MMA show. Whew, another big show, PJ.
Indeed.
So for
good event coming up this weekend.
For PJ Hewitt, my name is Josh Nason. You've been listening to the WGA MMA show. And until next week, keep your chin down and your hands up.